Recording in progress.
Welcome, everyone, especially Minister Pravin Gordhan, who is the Minister of Public Enterprise. Welcome, Transnet executive, led by the CEO, the board members, led by the Dr. Molefe, who is the chair of the board, and everybody, our guests, the staff of the department, including the portfolio committee staff. Welcome also to all our honorable members. Honorable members, I hope you have all received the responses to your questions that were supposed to be sent to all of you. Here, however, we will also expect the members to make their follow-ups to the questions they've already received their responses. We are also here as this portfolio committee to receive presentation on the private sector investment participation, which will be presented by the executive, together with the minister and the Department of Public Enterprise. Without wasting time, I think let's start with you, Secretary. Just give us a hint in relation to apologies.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members, guests. The only apology I received is from Ms. Tshabalala, who won't be able to join us today because she's actually traveling from Johannesburg to Cape Town as we speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mchumi. Honorable members, I think without wasting time, let's go straight to Transnet, their presentation. As we normally do, the minister will do an overview.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the committee members and to other guests that have signed on, and to our colleagues from Transnet. Just a few words, Chair. The first is that clearly Transnet is an organization that is stable on the one hand, but at the same time has to catch up with the legacy of state capture as described in the recent reports released by the commission chaired by Deputy Chief, or Acting Chief Justice, Zondo. Secondly, that report from the Zondo Commission gives us a very good idea of the kind of damage caused at Transnet over time, and the neglect of infrastructure, the neglect of maintenance of equipment, and which at the same time impacts on some of the operational issues that Transnet is confronted with. And what you have is a frank disclosure before you today in response to your questions, but also an indication of what is being done to rectify the mishaps of the past on the one hand, but at the same time, ensure that there's, if you like, a back-to-basics approach by Transnet in relation to its operational effectiveness and its operational efficiency as well. As a department, we now have reports from the Zondo Commission on SAA, on Denel, and on Transnet, and we have put measures in place at the request of the presidency to ensure that the appropriate actions are taken, either to recover funds or to lay criminal charges or to have other civil proceedings initiated. And we'll give the committee more details on this once we've got the appropriate legal advice given to us, which is currently being worked upon. So, Chair, that's the context for what you're going to hear from the Chief Executive and her colleagues. And we would like an opportunity in the next few weeks to brief the committee on the department's responses to the various reports emerging from the Zondo Commission. And we hope that the committee, regardless of political background, is unified with us in ensuring that we rectify the kind of mishaps that Transnet has been subjected to. And at the same time, our objective is to ensure that as a important logistics provider, both in relation to rail, the fuel pipeline on the one hand, and the ports on the other hand, Transnet is able to get back to first-class performance sooner rather than later, which I'm sure is something that the committee as a whole will join us in. So, Chair, let me hear the executives respond to the questions that have been raised by committee members. And if need be, I will come in to support their submissions as well. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Minister. Can we then ask the Transnet executive to start with their presentation?
Good morning, Honorable Members. Thank you once again, and Honorable Minister of Public Enterprises, thank you once again for giving us the opportunity to come back to the committee. Today's presentation is a follow-up, as we understand it, to the last presentation that we've made on the annual report. Chair, I know we've submitted all of the answers to the questions that we were given, and what we've tried to do in the presentation today is to focus on key areas. Firstly, we will talk through to the segment strategy that we have, and also do an indication of how the partnerships that we are forming are growth partnerships for Transnet, and also to then do an update on the announcements that were made at the SONA. With the announcement made at the SONA being covering three areas, basically, which is in sitting the Muha Container Terminal, the Durban Container Terminal RFQ, as well as the issue of slot sales. Honourable Chair, I would appreciate if you would let us know how much time we have for the presentation so that we can make sure that we take the time required for the presentation so that we enable the committee to ask any questions that they might have.
Actually, I wanted to give you 30 minutes, but having went so presentation is long. Therefore, can I ask you to stick to 45 minutes because we still have to go and attend the sitting at 2. Therefore, one member has to be ready. If we have to finish everything by 12 o'clock. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. We will take Andrew. If you can, in fact, on the segments, Andrew, if we can then just focus on the areas in the segment which tie directly to the immediate partnerships that we have identified for Transnet. and then we'll then quickly get to the slot. So we'll make sure to run it in the 45 minutes, Chair. So there are two presenters. Andrew Shaw will cover the fund side of the strategies, and then Cesar Mzimela will cover the parts around the slot there. Thank you very much. Can somebody slide the presentation?
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. Perhaps whilst the presentation is being flattered, let me start with a short introduction so that we don't waste any time. I know we've only have 45 minutes. The focus of what I'm going to present this morning is the way that we've devised the segment. Portia, did you want to say something?
Okay, maybe the presentation is up on my side. It's not up.
No, I don't think it either.
Andrew, maybe in the meantime, because we sent the presentation, you can start talking through the presentation, and hopefully soon we'll be able to have the presentation showing.
Okay. Honourable Chair and members, the structure of the presentation talks to our market focusing strategy, which is on 9 key segments. The commodity segments, the agriculture containers, which is largely manufacturing, and the focus of how Transnet is positioned in each one of these segment areas. Now, the Minister has already sketched some of the challenges that we face. Our balance sheet is really at the maximum. We don't have significant money to invest in the system. We have system optimization challenges. A lot of our infrastructure is in poor condition. So for us to reposition, what we've identified is some very critical but strategic partnerships with the private sector in segment areas where we think they can add considerable value and bring investment. So it's not a wholesale partnership strategy. It's very focused with areas where the private sector drives out growth and helps to build Transnet's balance sheet in such a way that we can invest to sustain a much improved condition of the rail and port network, but also expansion of that network so that it provides for future volume expansions and industrial capacity going forward. I did see the presentation and then it disappeared.
Dr. Shaw, I'm trying to assist.
Okay, thank you very much.
That must not stop you because we do have anyway.
Oh, okay. So if I focus then, if people do have the presentation, I will focus on slide 4, which talks to where we are from a financial performance perspective, operational issues, and also as Portia, the GCE had indicated, quite substantial shift in government policy around opening up the railway network to third-party access. Now, third-party access is a challenge for us, but it's also an opportunity. It's a challenge because our operating model at this point, up until now, has not allowed for open access from a third-party perspective. It's an opportunity in that having third-party railway operators on parts of our network that we're not fully utilizing brings us a source of revenue, which we can then use to reinvest in the network. So we need to reposition for that. And what we've done in respect of third-party access is we've repositioned to allow access in three very specific segments, containers, followed by automotive, followed by agriculture. So it's not access to the complete network in a wholesale fashion. It's a very managed access program. What you'll see on that slide is, and Okay, I see a different slide from the ones that I had.
What slide number are you?
I'm on slide. Pack.
Andrew, just the comment.
I was talking to this slide. So perhaps what we can do is move then to the next slide, which is the 9 key commodity areas. You can see on the slide here that we're focused on 9 key segments. We have, and if you look to the right-hand side, we have significant opportunities to grow volume in iron ore, manganese, coal, magnetite, and ferrochrome, which are the top 4 of those segments, largely mining orientated. The 3 segments, automotive, containers, and agriculture, which is the last one, are areas where private sector partnerships will help us to build more robust growth. They will bring those logistics chains that are currently very road focused into the rail fraternity and into our terminal space. And they will also, through the key partnerships that Portia had mentioned before, DCT and MCT, assist in enhancing the performance of those 2 export container terminals at Durban and Tukha. Again, I've lost the presentation, Portia, so I'm not sure if I should just speak through some of the key issues and leave it at that.
Andrew, just run with it.
Okay. So our focus on reforming our balance sheet is that we need partnerships to build and fund capacity to reinvest in equipment. Our equipment is in many areas old and needs replacement and refurbishment, particularly in respect of port equipment, but also in respect of railway infrastructure. We see the partnerships to drive value chain optimization. And when we talk about a value chain, we're actually talking about the full value chain that Transnet offers each of these segments. So if you think about it, from the mine through the railway infrastructure to the port to the global export commodities of, let's say, coal, in the same way, imports of containers from Southeast Asia through the port of Durban, from Durban through the terminal space behind the port, through the container corridor from there to Gauteng, and into the terminals in Gauteng, and then to the industrial and retail segments that you and I are used to seeing. So each time you pick up a product in a retail store, it will have followed very much that supply chain. What we want to do is improve the value proposition around that supply chain and to bring the private sector into key spaces in that supply chain. So it's very much a collaborative strategy, and one has to be very careful not to see it as a privatization strategy. The focus of collaboration is to build in road freight providers and shift them away from road and into rail, to give them skin in the game, to allow them to bring some of their operational performance and to allow them to bring some of their capital so that they can invest in some of our more dilapidated infrastructure. So the focus, therefore, is the strategic objectives that I've sketched out in each one of those segments, improve our operational performance, and our growth and renewal strategy. If I then move segment by segment, and I'll do this very quickly, what we foresee in the automotive segment strategy is that we will grow volumes quite significantly. The OEMs have a target of around 100% growth. In the case of Ford, 300% growth of exports. We don't have the ability to invest behind that growth. We have to partner with the private sector. We would like them, through the slot access model, to help to provide additional train sets. We would, through partnerships in Kalfontein, which is the auto hub just behind Tembisa, as well as the auto hubs at the port at Gqeberha, East London and Durban, focus on expanding the size of those terminals, the efficiency of those terminals, and also adding value-added services at those terminals, which we only do to a very limited extent. In the case of containers, our focus is to build much greater performance in the port of Durban, create opportunities for a hub port to be developed over a period of time. And our focus on DCT2 is bringing a terminal operator in with a global footprint, global best practice, and allow them to work with TPT to enhance the performance of that terminal, reinvest in infrastructure, particularly cranes, port handling equipment, etc. Remembering that DCT2 is only really half of the demand of the Port of Durban. Right next to DCT2 is DCT1, which will continue to be owned by TPT. Our global best practice indicates that where you bring a global terminal operator in, the incumbent public operator tends to improve performance in alignment with the global operator, because they're now able to focus on the areas where the global terminal operator has seen success. In the case of Tukwa, our focus there is to actually have a much more maritime-focused initiative, bring a partner in who will drive volumes and transshipments into that terminal, particularly focusing on Southeast Asia. So our strategy there is to enhance South Africa's competitiveness from a maritime perspective and reposition the port of Tukwa as one of the key elements of maritime trade. In the case of coal, our focus is to drive out expansion up to 81 million tons. We have to invest in coal. We don't foresee the need for any private sector partnership. This is a considerable part of our business. We'll continue to drive efficiencies and capital investment in this area. We know that we need to focus substantially on coal. In the case of iron ore, our focus is to sell wagons to the private sector, largely to the incumbent miners, ensuring that we create space for juniors to have access to our network. And we would therefore operate a hook and haul service. By hook and haul, we mean we will pull those wagons through our traction, our locomotives, in order to get them to the Port of Saldanha and ultimately to expand our capacity from 60 million tons to 67 million tons. In the case of manganese, our focus in Tukwa is to create a manganese terminal
continue and as soon as he comes back. So for the chrome and magnetite, these are actually really important new economy minerals that we must make sure that we're able to increase their evacuation, ideally through Richards Bay, because one of the things that we're also trying to do is to consolidate and ensure that the ports move a lot more closely towards some sort of specialization. So the two channels that move chrome and iron ore and chrome and manganese and magnetite are both Richards Bay and the Port of Maputo. If I may pause about the Port of Maputo, the Port of Maputo is really important for our network, our channel, because it ensures that we have the shortest turnaround time for wagons and our locals, which increases the efficiency of the system. So that's the one evacuation route. But our primary evacuation route for chrome and magnetite is through the port of Richards Bay. We are looking to expand operations. And as you know, from last year, after the two fires that we had at the MPT, at the multipurpose terminal, there's a lot of work to improve performance on that side. Oh, Andrew's back. Andrew, are you back?
I'm back. Would you like me to continue, Portia?
Take on the energy segment.
Okay. So the energy segment is an area where Transnet has been positioned traditionally around the pipeline, which is from Durban, and you can see up to Heidelberg into Gauteng. The focus there is on liquid fuels. The real opportunity and shift that lies ahead for us is LNG. So repositioning Transnet to focus on LNG requires that we work with the private sector, and through the TNPA, which is the port landlord owner, we create opportunities for terminal owners and operators in the port of Richards Bay, Tukwa and Saldanha. The focus then would be to how we connect those terminals into the inland market. the key opportunity there is the Lilly pipeline, which you see on the map from Richards Bay to Secunda. So there's an opportunity, again, to work with some of the big incumbents. There are a number of petrochemical companies that we wish to engage with to potentially reposition. The focus of our operating division, which is Transnet Pipelines, will thus change to be focused not only on liquid fuel, which is the case at present, but to deal with transmission and supply of reliable LPG to hinterland and coastal market. We can go to the next slide, please, if that's possible. So agriculture has for us represented an area of considerable challenge because of a number of reasons. One, the first of which is that it has grown enormously. It's also grown into the areas of much more perishable commodities, such as fruits, citrus, stone fruits, etc. And those areas require special handling. They require much better treatment, if you like, in transit than many other commodities, such as maize and soya. They dispersed across the country, and to a large extent, we've lost this market to road freight, and we've picked it up only through our exit terminals in the respective ports. In order to reposition, and the president was very clear about this in the SONA announcement, is that we need to focus on port efficiency and creating the correct port infrastructure to serve the agricultural community. A lot of this has to do with reefers. So reefers are refrigerated containers which require reefer points to be provided at the respective ports at the point of harvesting and export of these key agricultural commodities. So we need to make sure that we can deal with the large periods of demand at certain times of the year. Key focus is the Port of Cape Town, the Port of Port Elizabeth at Gqeberha, and to a lesser extent, the Port of Durban. At the rail network side, what we wish to do is create the opportunities for hubs to be developed, where the private sector helps us to invest in some of those key hubs. You will see some of them mentioned by numbers on the right-hand side of the map of South Africa. Key focus areas are Klerksdorp, where there's a grain hub, the Limpopo area, where there's opportunities for fresh fruit and citrus hubs, Bethlehem, where, again, there's grain opportunities, and then down closer to the Eastern Cape, where there's opportunities for citrus, Western Cape, opportunities for a range of agricultural commodities. And then linking into that is to provide opportunity for the private sector to operate its own rail services or for us to operate haulage services of wagons owned by the private sector. So we still need to do a lot of the background work in this area. So it's the last area of slot sales that we see opening up in the first tranche of slot sales. At the beginning, I mentioned containers is our first area of slot sale that we will provide for, autos next, and then agriculture last. If I can go to the next slide, please. The one element of that slide that I didn't mention is branch lines concessions, which we'll be pushing harder. There's greater alignment with NDOT about how those will be focused on those access areas of deep rural requirement. And in some instances, they will require some level of cross-subsidy in order to be sustained. Our focus, though, is to drive the concession process still harder and to allow some of those branch lines and concessionaires, provided that they have the right safety case from the RSR, to have access to the immediate terminals on our network. I think I can... Portia, do you want to deal with the SONA announcement?
Andrew... Okay, let me just take it over. Jay, we had in the SONA, there were three issues that were announced, but I am not going to do the slot sales because I do think it's important that CESA goes through how we anticipate the first rollout of the slot sales. In as far as the Durban Container Terminal, you'll remember last year, Pier 2, and even in the last visit of the Portfolio Committee, what we are trying to do is to get a partner who would not be a majority. We would remain the majority shareholder on that terminal to help us to grow the capacity of the terminal significantly beyond our current utilization. The RFIs, which was a request for information, went out in August last year just after the hacking and the looting. We were really quite worried if the RFI was going out about the level of interest that we'd be able to secure. But we had significant responses that came from the market. And as we've previously indicated, the responses came from some of the world-class port terminal operators. We also need to upgrade our operating systems. And also, it's not so much an issue of the skills to manage ports that we have. It's a lot more around ensuring that we are better connected and also ensuring that we rebuild a reputation as South Africa to get as one of the best operating ports on the continent. The RFQs have now gone out immediately after the State of the Nations, which is the State of the Nation address, which are requests for quotations. In the request for quotation, the process starts to narrow down who is going to be in the process. In the first part, it's we test the market, we find out if anyone is interested, and it remains open. The RFQ is an open process. Anyone can apply, those who were in the RFI and anyone who was outside of the RFI. But after the RFQ, because what the RFQ does is we're qualifying all of the various bidders, and we're qualifying them according to what we're looking for in a partner who comes into Durban Terminal, which would mean that when we get to the last phase, and the last phase is the request for proposal, then it will be a closed process only for the people who had been through the RFQ process. The next process, the next terminal is the Arusha Container Terminal. Same process completely as the Durban Container Terminal. The only difference here being we are looking for a partner who's going to bring transshipment cargo. We're working very closely with the Kuchen Development Corporation on the IDZ, because ideally what we would be looking for is somebody who sees Lucha, the port, and the back of port as a potential site for just-in-case logistics, as you all would have seen, I imagine, that what the pandemic has generated is actually a new branch which gives us an opportunity as South Africa if we are able to become efficient in the just-in-case area from the just-in-time logistics system. So we're hoping that we would be able to get a cargo owner or at least a partner who will bring in cargo that requires significant final assembly, which would then provide opportunities for the IDZ to be able to get additional work. Same period as the other. We by October 22, as we've indicated, we want to close up with the partner selection. And then the last part of the year is the setting up of the companies and the regionalized to operationalization. But by October, we would want to have the partner selected. We are working very closely with the union in this exercise, because as you know, what is really important is that we must keep our workers in the process. But really, these two, again, are about how do we grow our footprint as Transnet and ensure that even with these changes that are happening and private sector participants being brought into the whole system in our whole value chain, we are able to continue to control our part of the operation. Cesar, if you come in on the slot sales, please.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, portfolio committee members, and good morning, Minister and colleagues. I'll go directly into the presentation, and I think to a large extent, Andrew has already set the context of why we are pursuing this particular direction in providing slot sales onto our network as part of the first step towards the policy direction relating to the liberalization of the rail sector. On here, what we indicate is that from a TFR position is that we believe that we should remain as the network owner of the entire, network, and also continue to operate. In addition, what we have also actually set out is that we believe that we have strength in a number of the corridors, especially the heavy haul corridors, and we would want to maintain and let's say our strong position on those corridors. And we refer to that as us actually retaining our grandfather rights, which means all of the slots that we currently hold, we would want to ensure that they remain within the TFR and Transnet space. But I will show further on that there are, however, opportunities to bring in other players for those slots, I mean, that we do not currently utilize. Part of the journey to get us to the point at which we have determined what level of slot sales we can provide to the market is that we started off by undertaking an accounting separation of the TFR space, where we wanted to have a very clear understanding of what the infrastructure costs are to the railway, and what are the operational costs. And the intention is to be able, basically, I mean, to ring fence, I mean, those costs, so that we always know what the cost of operations are versus the cost of the infrastructure. And this is important because if other players are going to come onto our network, they come in as operators, but then there must be some level of the independence of determining what the cost of access to the infrastructure is. We have also, are proceeding on the basis that we would actually do this in phases, and that the phase one, as already indicated, I mean, by Andrew, that our focus on in phase one would be on the container corridor. But additionally, we think there is an opportunity on the East London route as well to provide some slots for the automotive industry. And then we would move through to, I mean, phase two. But phase two would require us to do some work in reinstating some of the slots that have been lost in the system prior to the reopening of additional slots that may actually provide further opportunity to bring in other players as well. And then we talk about a phase three. If we move to the next slide, we just thought, I don't know who's powering. Can we move to the next slide, please? Yeah. So just using the container corridor, I would just thought it would be important just to give a sense and a feel of how we would have actually determined what slots are sellable slots, I mean, for, private operators at this stage. So we start off, and I know, I mean, this looks like quite a complicated slide, but I'm actually going to quite simplify it. And I think if maybe we can just focus on the top left, where, I mean, essentially what we're showing is that we normally start with what we call theoretical capacity of what is available on the network. But we then need to ensure that we take into account that there would be maintenance that needs to be undertaken on the network. And in order to be able to do that, best practice actually indicates that you would have to then reduce the number of slots by roughly 35%, which is what, I mean, we would have done. And this is an example of the container corridor, which then would move us, I mean, to 47 slots, I mean, being available. Unfortunately, where we are, I mean, right now, is that we have lost an additional 22 slots, which only leaves us effectively with 25 slots, which we define as operational slots at this point in time. The 22 slots are lost as a result of a number of issues, the state of the infrastructure, the theft and vandalism that we actually experience on the network, and many other issues, which then takes us, I mean, to the 25 slots, which we define as operational slots. Thereafter, I mean, what we're showing is that currently our utilization is only 15 of those 25 slots. And then going forward, we have a further uptake of slots that would want to actually utilize, I mean, for Eskom, which would then move us to operating a total of 19 slots and leaving the difference of 6 slots, which we would not be utilizing. These are the slots that we would be putting out for sale on phase one and on the container corridor. And on the next slide, I will just show, I mean, the rest of the slide just talks about why we end up having some of the challenges in terms of reducing the number of slots. So phase one, just to give it a little bit more feel of what we mean by phase one, is that we say there are 6 slots that are available. And if we look at the 6 slots, the 6 slots are either between City Deep and Durban, which means it would allow, I mean, for further movement of container traffic between City Deep and Durban by any private participant. Alternatively, there are also six slots that are available that starting us from Polokwane all the way down to Durban. And if we were to get an uptake on these slots would really be responding to the citrus industry, because there is huge opportunity to be able to move some agricultural products out of Polokwane down to the Durban complex. But there is some assistance that we would require in that respect in order to be able to facilitate that. The alternative in terms of the use of these slots could be by starting off from Bethlehem, to the Durban complex. And if the slots are taken up, from the Bethlehem area to the Durban complex, then this slot would then be responding to further movement of the grain flows, because that's where there's a large requirement for movement of grain. I just thought that it was important, that we highlight this, that it's not 6 + 6 + 6, but it depends on who decides to pick up on the available slots, and it would either respond to a variety of commodities which move in containers from City Deep, or respond to the citrus flows, or respond to the grain flows as well. If we move then, to the next slide. On the previous slide, I indicated that in order to be able to facilitate the movement from Polokwane down to Durban, there is some level of assistance that we would actually require to ensure that this is made possible. And it speaks specifically to the LUD, section between Rietvlei and Pretoria, which is currently, compromised by a number of issues. And we just thought, we would actually just show that in the pictures below, that we're sitting with issues where there are legal connections onto our line. There are, issues of encroachment on the line, and it does actually pose a bit of a huge, safety challenge, for us in ensuring that we're able to restore this line in order to be able to then offer the six slots for the citrus industry. Moving on, to the next slide. The other option, as indicated, is 10 slots, which we think there may be 10 slots, that are available to be utilized between, Pretoria and East London for the automotive, industry. The slots are quite specifically are between Springfontein and East London, but we know that, a number of the automotive customers are based in the Pretoria, area. So these are slots that would be immediately available. And we have worked on this to try and also align with, the indications from a number of the automotive OEMs, that have indicated the future growth of building additional units in South Africa, and that in order to be able to also facilitate that, they would want some assurance of movement on rail through to the ports. And this is really our first response to actually indicate that there is a possibility of us being able to provide these 10 slots for immediate use, whilst we continue to work on further options to align with some of the proposals that have been put forward by the likes of Ford and others in the automotive industry. The next slide will then talk about, what then would be phase two. Phase two for us is that there is a potential, as already indicated, to restore a lot more slots that could then be operated on the container corridor and other corridors. But it would require that there is a significant work that is done to upgrade, the infrastructure. The infrastructure currently is not in a state that it should be in. And it requires, significant, maintenance. The state of the infrastructure is the direct reason why also we find ourselves having to run trains on this particular corridor and on an average of about 36 to 38 hours, as opposed to what is the design time of the corridor, which is 18 hours. But we're unable to run, I mean, the trains efficiently on 18 hours at this point in time, simply because the state of the infrastructure is not what it should be in, and there would need to be some work that is actually done. We would then be working towards ensuring that we facilitate the upgrade of the infrastructure to restore it to its proper condition. But we also believe that, I mean, a critical part of finding a solution for the better running of trains is that there must be a solution that speaks to the security issues and also speaks to the amount of encroachment that we are experiencing, especially on the container corridor specifically. Then the last slide just really talks to some of the minimum implementation requirements. I mean, from our side, I mean, key is that we would need to ensure that there is some type of a framework that we put into place to ensure that, I mean, as other players come to the network, that there is a very clear, there's clarity in terms of, I mean, you know, the issues pertaining to the rules around access to the network. We still have to finalize our pricing, a framework. There is a lot of work that has already been done, I mean, at this stage, but we just need to finalize it. And we are utilizing international benchmarks and also benchmarks that have been utilized within South Africa in other industries as well to help to guide us on where we land, I mean, finally, in respect of this. We are also indicating that anybody who would have any intention to come onto our line would need to make sure that they register and are actually certified by the RSR, and that they equally have to meet the minimum qualifying criteria that is specified by the RSR to be able to obtain access onto our network, because this speaks directly to ensuring that we maintain the same level of safety by applying the same rules across all of the people who would be utilizing the network. Important, I mean, to us is that we're saying a sector bargaining council must be established before there is access of any other player within the TFR and Transnet space, in order to make sure that also that none of our workers are disadvantaged in any way, in that somebody else comes in and is not willing, I mean, to pay the same level of remuneration as what we would actually paying in terms, and I mean the conditions and conditions of employment. We would need to finalize some level of institutional arrangement around how we would interface between ourselves and PRASA, because for both the container corridor and also what I showed as slots that are actually available from the Pretoria side down to East London for the automotive industry, we actually find ourselves utilizing a portion of the PRASA network in the Pretoria area. So part of finalizing the way forward on this is that we would need to agree with PRASA as to, you know, what the arrangements would be in that respect when we allow additional players onto the network, because we do not believe that you can handle those relationships. It can be a three-way relationship. So the idea at this stage is that we are able to reach some level of agreement with PRASA, so that there is only one agreement between the railway railway infrastructure, I mean, manager, and whoever would be coming in as an operator to the network. We then talk about, I mean, our go-to-market strategy, and I think that members would have had the president mention, I mean, the 1st of April. So the 1st of April, we are working very hard towards, I mean, the 1st of April to be able to go out to market with an RFP, because we would still be open, utilizing an open market process to identify and ensure that it has been a transparent process in allowing whoever would want to actually utilize the available slots to come onto our line. Thank you, Chair. I will stop here.
Okay. Is that suggest you all done with the presentation, CEO?
Chair, that's the end of the presentation, and I hope it covered all of the issues that the committee wanted to hear. Honourable Chair, we've got Mayor De Tlase, who is standing in for the Chair of Transnet, and she'd like to have to have the last word, as is rightfully on our side, and then we will hear from you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for allowing us to once again come and visit you. I would like to first state apologies from our Chair, who is currently not well at all. I mean, he's having another op today, I think, and he had one about 2 weeks ago, but he's having some health challenges that are being attended to. And secondly, I apologize for coming in late, but there was some bit of a miscommunication with my office on the meetings, but I'm glad that we are here. Just to reiterate, Chair, that this new direction that you see introduced to the portfolio committee that Transnet is taking, first with the segment strategies, previously we had an organization that was just one big organization and with work happening in there, but we couldn't really be able to easily pinpoint as to where the challenges were and what it is that we needed to do. You had the different divisions, even though they were handing over to each other at certain points, there wasn't a proper view of, for instance, with the different segments that were covered in the discussion today. So we moved away, and we're still in the process of doing that, of not just having a divisional view, but having a strategic view of the different lines that we are running, better collaborating amongst ourselves as the different divisions, but most importantly, building the value chains of the different, the iron ore line, the coal line, the manganese line, and all the lines that we have. That way, we're better able to together work on whatever blockages, whatever challenges, and other issues that we could come, as opposed to saying, it is TFR's problem, it is not my problem, I'm not going to get involved in there. For instance, containers, we know TFR is involved, TPT is involved, TNPA has some bearing in it, and this attempt, which is beginning to work very well, is to make sure that the collaboration across the value chain is much better, and then we'll be able to better streamline the business and be better able to account for the challenges and deal with the challenges that we have. Then on the last presentation by Ms. Mzimela on the TFR slots, what we're trying to do there is to use up the slack that we have in the system, respond to customer needs, because customers want more from Transnet, and we need their help in being able to give them the more, but also to allow for better a broader participation and for transparency, and also to be able to learn from our customers where they are better than us in certain things. So in sharing what we shared with the portfolio committee, that is what we were hoping to achieve, to understand why we're doing things slightly differently or sometimes quite differently from the way that we were doing things in the past, and what we're trying to achieve on that. So with those words, Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. And we continue to be committed to South Africa and to improving the way that we're operating, the way that we're doing business, and making sure that at the end, our country gets the best out of this great asset that it has invested quite a lot in. Kia leboha, Chair.
Thank you so much, member of the board. We wish the chairperson of the board speedily recover. But also I need to indicate to the committee that the Honorable Chabu Mkhwanazi is also, though I saw her logged in, she is at the hospital currently and to also do some procedure. We wish also a successful procedure to her. Honorable members, that's the presentation from Transnet. I will also check if the Director General has anything to say before I give to the members to engage the report. Mr. Tlhakudi.
Morning, Chair.
Morning, Minister.
No, there's not much to add from our side, Chair. Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Honorable members, that is the presentation. And I am mindful of the fact that you did receive your responses to the questions you have asked. And on top of that, one is free to engage on this comprehensive input that has been presented by the executive. Can I do what I normally do and just ask the members to engage one by one? We have Honorable Dlamini, whom I think is supposed to have a first bite. Honorable Dlamini.
Thanks, Chair. Morning, colleagues. I think, by and large, the report emphasized what we were told during our oversight, that the ports would be segmented so that they are dedicated ports, in that containers would be mostly in Durban, coal in Richards Bay, gas and automotive in Guha and the likes. I noticed we made mention of Maputo as part of the plan. I'm not too sure what then becomes or what is the relationship between Transnet and Maputo port. Are we partners there? Have we invested in that port? Or is it going to be an arrangement of directing some traffic to Maputo for the regional operations outside the confines of our borders? Two, the one issue that seems to be not adequately addressed is the issue of a responsible entity for our rail infrastructure. Currently, it's between Transnet and PASA. And as colleagues would know, there seems to be some problems in that type of relationship, in that Transnet owes PASA, PASA owes Transnet, and no one is paying anyone because they both feel they are owed. The issue of security, how is it going to work if we still don't have a single entity responsible for rail safety? What I'm trying to get at is Transnet going to employ security to be responsible for their lines and leave cross lines, or are they going to collaborate? Outside of having that single entity responsible for our infrastructure, how are we going to deal with issues of encroachment? Because you find sometimes that a PRASA is responsible for the land that's been invaded, but Transnet gets affected. there's still a grey area which has not been sufficiently covered by the presentation. Maybe if we can get a detailed plan in that regard, it would make better sense. Not that it doesn't make sense, but it would be clearer to all of us in terms of how it's going to work going forward, so that we avoid a situation where we put plans in place and we have not sufficiently done our homework and we leave loopholes for that thing not to work optimally, then we'll have a problem. And as other political parties who are always keen to say, let's privatize, these things are failing, would then have a field day. Those are the two concerns on my part, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Kachalia.
Chair, I have just joined the meeting. I thought it mistakenly started at 10, but it started at 9. So I've just joined. I'm a bit in the dark. Let me listen.
Okay. Honorable Mawotwe.
Honorable Mawotwe was here, but I'm here.
Okay. Honorable Komani.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Transnet, for the presentation. However, Chair, one needs to check as maybe a follow up to the questions that I have raised earlier and the questions that was submitted to me. You stated that 582 locomotives are currently not operational, and 444 legacy locomotives and 138 new locomotives from the 1064 contract. How will this then impact the service delivery? I think that should have been part of the question that the response there for the question that I've raised earlier. Or maybe I did not raise it the other way. And the next one is then B. Do you have the backup plan in the event the prototype testing is not successful? And lastly, Chair, while we were at an oversight at Durban, we heard that there were issues regarding the policy that are holding the entity back, like the local content requirement. As we are seated here now with the department, we would maybe like the department to update the committee on how is it assisting the entity to resolve these policy issues and in terms of if they have started assisting them, what is the process on doing that? Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Komani. Honorable Piri.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning to yourself, members of the committee, members from Transnet, the management, and also let me acknowledge the board member, not forgetting to pass my good wishes and speedy recovery to the chair of the board. Chair, let me start by appreciating the presentation as expected, but I've got two, if not three, issues that I feel they need to be well addressed. When we were there, Mrs. Posh took us to the workshop on the site of engineering, the China North program. I believe even though we were told that it's in court, but I thought it's going to be part of a well-detailed report that talks to us, trying to give us what are the main issues and how will it hamper back to us in terms of the contract with the China North. But because it was not being detailed, I am just putting it forward, Chair, or next time when they come, we need, maybe we must have a special PC that deals with China not contract, so that we must have a clear inside view of that matter. Because I think I have a different view that we need to have a different approach with the China not contract. But let me just pike it there. Also, while we were on oversight, the Transnet management spoke about regarding the policy matter, which is holding the entity back, like the issue of requirements with the treasury approval turnaround times, and the Solites, you know, they were talking about even the issue of your supply chains. Then I want to understand from the department, I saw Khatazo is here. How are they assisting the entity? I've raised that question even at the oversight, because maybe we're having new members, they could not respond better. I think it's one of the roles of the department to assist the entity into resolving issues, because we've got a responsibility as a portfolio and a department with intergovernmental relations. So I wanted to check with the department itself, how are you assisting the entity in terms of policy matters that are holding them back? Lastly, Chair, while they were presenting, they were talking about this segment strategy and partnership that would like to enter into a private sector. However, it does not detail how it goes about selecting its private sector partners and criteria that will be used to partner with Transnet. But as the I think the entity should also detail the process required by the private sector business to enter into partnership with themselves. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Puri. Just before I call on Honorable Kwankwa, I just want to also help Honorable Kachalia to be on the same wavelength with us in relation to what is happening. Honorable Kachalia, we were presented by Transnet with the private sector participation or private sector investment participation. We got that presentation. But however, we understand that in our last meeting, members were asked to write their questions because we finished, were to rush to the sitting, but we didn't complete the entire duration of the session. Therefore, members were asked to write down their questions directly to Transnet CEO, and then some of those questions were responded to in writing. Therefore, despite that you received the response in writing, we also again expecting members to make follow-ups on the questions that they have asked. Therefore, you might have missed the presentation, but you did receive the presentation prior to this session. Therefore, you do have perhaps an opportunity to browse it or to look. I know it's not easy to read a presentation fully when it has actually been just sent to you in slides. But I think now you might have picked up some of the issues. Therefore, I would like you to be in a position to develop something out of all those issues, whether you have a follow-up on your questions that you have asked or from your responses, or perhaps you have picked something up on your presentation. Thank you. Honorable Kwankwa.
Chair, thank you. You can come back to me when you are ready. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Kwankwa. I think I saw Honorable Kwankwa. Did he He locked out again. Okay. Maybe he's not here. Okay. Let's come to Honorable Buthelezi. Honorable Buthelezi, IFP. Maybe he's not here, but I don't remember seeing him. Okay. Let's go back to you, Honorable Kashalia, if you are in a position to do so.
Chair, I'm in some position to do so. On the question of the questions that were tabled and answered, I did submit a large number of questions directly to Transnet. CEO did reply to me, and I think sent a copy of the answers to the secretary. Those questions and answers are not have not been tabled here. So perhaps the secretary can do it, and if he doesn't have it, I will send it again to him. But that's a separate. On the question of the presentation. In the presentation does speak to Transnet. In its segment strategy and the partnerships that it wishes to enter into with the private sector. Now, following on the Zondo Commission and the various shocking revelations that have come up there and are still emerging, we need obviously as an oversight committee to ensure that. That there is transparency going forward. So I would like to understand what mechanisms with regard to transparency and regard to the due diligence around these potential partnerships that are going to be entered into it will be shared with the committee. Because we don't want a repeat of the past, and we want to understand and have input, if we may, into the various mechanisms and terms of reference in terms of due diligence and transparency. For example, you know, one wouldn't want just a bold declaration of some secondary party. A company that's been put forward. We would need to understand who stands behind this company, what the subsidiary companies are, so that we can delve deeper into it and understand if there are any smoke and mirrors going on behalf of the people who are approaching Transnet, because we don't want our wool pulled over our eyes. We don't want any undue influence. We don't want anything improper. We've had that in spades, and we now need to correct it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Honorable Kachalia. Honorable Kumede.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Chair, I think let me join you and wish perhaps the chair of the board a speedy recovery. I think this is the time we do need a dedicated effort that people of that caliber are always present when we take these meetings. Chair, and once again, thanks to the department as well as CEO Portia for the presentation, and as well as being proactive, that some of the matters raised at SONA are in fact being touched and put into correct perspective. That will be great for us to follow the situation as is. But Chair, let me remark on this one because I think it will be important. The slides presented are not the same as the document we made or the document we received. I will request that through the assistance of Disang, we get perhaps resubmitted the document that has been flighted today, because there are quite a lot of gaps in terms of the presentation. Chair, I'm generally happy with the questions as we raised them last time. Also hope that some of the things that are being mentioned there will in fact be put into effect. I appreciated some initiatives taken in fact in terms of trying to quell or fight what we may call it, its corruption. And the new board that in fact is attempting to clean, to sweep clean in the situation, because to us, corruption appears the cancer that in fact may end up destroying all of us. Chair, I think as well as it will be important that I remember last time I raised, when I was looking at the presentation, agriculture presents 12.5% of perhaps the GDP. And it will be important. It's the same thing that, in fact, one queried last time when we were giving the presentation, that the department declared that they were, in fact, weak on property as well as agriculture. So for me, it will then be important if you look at the comparisons with all other commodity segments. Agriculture appears to be performing very, very much well. So it will be important that we begin to harness and make sure that we put that into proper perspective. However, I want to clarify, Chair, that as we deal today with the segment strategies, there is something that says this still requires the approval. So what is it that we need to do so that the whole thing is then put into implementation so that we don't get our processes delayed? If there is a approval required, let's make sure that we are given a kind of a report, or at the end of the meeting, after having dissected the presentation, we then afford the department then the opportunity that they proceed. The slot capacity check. We are losing 22 slots. Is there any intention that those 22 slots we may perhaps want them back, resuscitate them, or it's just that we have lost them perhaps for kicks? If that's the case, Chair, we would like to be guided. But we as well made a proposal, because this will always remain controversial, Chair, the involvement of a private sector. I think last time we made a proposal as a committee that we may require some discussions so that we run away from these ambiguities where we interpret, as it has been alluded in the presentation, that it is not in fact, privatization. But as well as it has been said that we'll be holding a bigger percentage share. But let's discuss it so that we all have a common understanding. But, Chair, I'll not be doing justice if I'm not saying, especially to the Minister, the Department, DG, as well as the CEO, that taking the analysis of all SOEs we have within the Department, you'll understand, looking at the vast operation of Transnet, that's the only hope we may have as a committee. You know, putting aside, if we were to put them in terms of priority, Transnet, we may put it as priority number one. I'll put aside electricity. I'm talking in terms of could be the efficiency and the potential that the entity may have to be able to sustain itself. Transnet appears the best. So let us at least have something that in fact we will be in a position to make sure that as this portfolio committee, we managed to manage Transnet, at least one entity that will yield positive results at the end of the day. If I'm not mistaken, Chair, we are only left with 2 years. It will be better that this current year we make sure that we get all the necessary things that begins to help Transnet to be sustainable, so that we are sure. Especially those things, I think we are always saying that we want to go back to rails. The PRASA Transnet situation in terms of rails, I think Honorable Dlamini is correct. The only thing that worries us is the sabotage. So those things will always be there. And we want to find out the strategy as well. How do we fight those things? Because those are the things that, in fact, are letting us down. Otherwise, Chair, thank you very much for the presentation. I think it's certainly a mouthful. And I'm happy with the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Gumede. Honorable Shabalala? Honorable Judy Shabalala?
I think she's still on the flight. She has just texted me to request that her questions on the group chat be covered in the responses, please.
Okay.
She's still on the flight, then.
Okay. Thank you, Lebo. Thank you, honorable members. I don't know if I'm missing anyone among the members of the committee. Is there anyone that I'm missing? Hope I've covered all the members here. The CEO, the only issue that I want to raise with the executive that I've been trying to communicate with the department for some time, and I think it has the potential to put the portfolio committee in an extreme negative way. The committee received a complaint from former workers at Transnet Port of Nguha and Richards Bay, who actually complained to us, the committee, to have been unfairly dismissed. Their plea to Parliament was to assist them to get access to what they refer to as the Owen Mava forensic report. which they believe very strong that it has absolved them. We had a meeting with the department and the DG where we promised to look into the, they promised to look at this. To date, we are receiving letters and calls on a daily, on daily basis. And we are accused of failing the public on the, as the committee. These workers have now applied for promotion of access to information act in the High Court. Today, seemingly 11 family members are affected by this matter. And they are demanding that the report has exonerated them. I wish with all the responses, CEO, that you will be making in relation to a question asked here by honorable members, but help us to understand how this matter can be resolved once and for all. It's making me extremely uncomfortable to be asked questions or to be asked to intervene on something in my capacity. You must understand I'm also representing another arm of the state, which is the legislative arm. Everybody must be in a position to perform his duties or her duties on any arm, while we are also making other arms, including executive, to take responsibility and ask questions and do and follow up everything. But we are also expected to also provide answers and act on the questions that are put on us as a legislative arm of the state. Therefore, please help us to understand how Transnet is in a position to resolve this matter. I don't understand that the workers can end up having to go to court just to get an information that they have a right to, unless they don't have a right to that particular document. If they do have, why is it difficult? By the way, they also claim that the report also instructed them to come back to work, but unfortunately, until to this day, and this thing has been dragging for almost 2 years now. Please help us on this matter. Can I also give to you the executive, including the minister, to respond to these issues? I don't know who has to start. Yes, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Can I cover some of the issues and then the more specific issues our Transnet colleagues can begin to address as well? And then I can round up at the end, Chair, when you are ready to round up. On the question of Maputo Port, the CEO will explain the relationship. Honorable Dlamini raises an important question on security. At the moment, I'm afraid the gangs, stroke syndicates, stroke individuals that are undermining the network through some of the measures that Mr. Mzimela spoke about do so in a fairly unfettered way. And that's, I think, an important challenge for the state. And a lot more needs to be done, either to protect the infrastructure, copper cables. Chair, you might want to mute, Chair. Chair? Chair. So whether it's cable theft, whether it is rail theft, whether it is damage to the foundation on which rail tracks are actually laid, the interference with signaling infrastructure, all of that is holding up the efficiencies within Transnet rail operations at the moment. And as a country, I think we need to do a lot more. Firstly, in relation to communities which are close to railway infrastructure, so that they understand that the economic well-being of the country as a whole, including perhaps that community as well, is going to be impacted negatively if we allow gangs to operate. Of course, you'd be aware that my colleague at DTIC is looking into the question of banning the export for sale of scrap metal. I personally and the department is fully in favor of that, because the time has come where this industry has been given enough rope to do its work, but it is in fact encouraging a phenomenal growth in theft of one kind or another in terms of infrastructure that you've seen damage CRASA as an organization as well. So, Chair, in that particular regard, I think the committee should join all of us in government across party lines to ensure that better security is operationalized, but also that a new consciousness needs to get into the public domain in order to be able to do so. On the question of locomotives, I think the CEO will give you the numbers that are involved. And in particular, where we stand on 1064, bearing in mind that the 1064 issue A is sensitive, B is before the courts, and we might be limited in disclosing things that we don't want in the public domain, either because they are in court or because there's commercial negotiations going on. But the CEO can explain that as well. On the question of local content and constraints in that regard, we have been interacting with Minister Patel, and at the official level with DTIC, and are making some progress on a case-by-case basis. But what we do require now is a more structured understanding about what has a negative impact on Transnet's operations and the latitude that Transnet can be given in this particular regard. Although, as the committee will understand, local content plays an important part in developing industry in South Africa itself, which then in turn creates jobs in our environment, which are absolutely crucial, whether it is for young people or older, more experienced people as well. On Honorable Piri's point around China North, I referred to it already, so I leave that in the hands of the CEO and her team. Similarly, Chair, on National Treasury and the procurement issues, there have been interactions with the Minister of Finance in this particular regard. The department is assisting, but both in respect of Transnet and in Eskom, there's a recognition that a different kind of dispensation needs to be put in place, which does not handicap quick responses by these organizations to obtaining either parts or equipment that would actually improve overall performance of the organizations themselves. On the question that Honorable Kachalia raises, and it says by Honorable Piri as well, how will the private sector be selected? Firstly, I think it's important that we already do have transparency in one form, and that is the RFQs and RFIs are published both on the Transnet website, but also on the Treasury website. So anybody who is interested can get the details from that. But secondly, I think it's a fair point that what we require to understand is what the criteria are, or inverted, or what are we looking for in any particular partner or venture that we are getting into. And I'm sure Transnet has that detail, but those can be made transparent as well. And what kind of due diligence is going to be exercised in order to ensure that we have legitimate businesses that are interacting with us in this particular regard. We would be in full agreement, and I think this might have happened before some of the honorable members joined the meeting, when I said that we are looking very carefully together with the boards of all of the SOEs at the recommendations and findings of the Zondo Commission. We have put a legal machinery in place to look at what kind of actions can be taken. And we will meet regularly, as we have already, with the boards in order to ensure that they pursue civil and criminal procedures that are required by the law in relation to transgressions that took place, which the Zondo Commission has explicitly and named individuals or companies that were involved as well. Honorable Gumede makes the point about sweeping clean as far as corruption goes. I think we need to be a lot louder in this particular regard. I've been saying this to the and we need to be in a position where all of us have a zero tolerance approach as far as corruption is concerned. The segment strategy has been put to government, has been put to the board. It will get its sort of final approval shortly and might also require the involvement of cabinet. But that is a matter that we will try to resolve within the next few weeks, so that the executive at Transnet, at the different operating divisions, are very clear about what they are implementing. And as I indicated in my opening remarks, there's also, and as Ms. Letlape said, there's a back-to-basics program as well in terms of just plain efficiency that is required in relation to the operations of Transnet. On the involvement of the private sector that is raised by some of the colleagues and honorable members, let's be clear about one thing. Transnet is not being privatized. Nothing within Transnet is being privatized. At the same time, we are faced with the reality, which is a theme that you've heard the various presenters talk through, which is that Transnet doesn't have the capital that it requires in order to attend to every single need that the economy has, or particular sectors of the economy has, if you take each of the nine segments, for example. Secondly, as part of its operational efficiency, it does require investment in equipment and in infrastructure. And so it needs to find alternate ways of generating revenue, which would assist in terms of both operating costs, but also investment in maintenance of equipment and finding new equipment that is actually required, either for the purposes of reinforcing its rail operations or its port operations. And this is the delicate balance that we will ensure is maintained within Transnet. And at the same time, what we do need to do, one of the presentations covered this, Chair, that we, in order for the logistics sector as a whole to be on the same footing without giving unfair advantage either to Transnet or to any private sector player, it's important that there is a single bargaining council. And I hope that the committee will support that as well and ensure that we begin to move in that direction in order to create a level playing field in this particular regard. So there will be the involvement of the private sector, both from a revenue and capital point of view, but also from a competition and efficiency point of view, so that Transnet continues to improve its operational efficiency and its different components understand very clearly, both at a management level, but also at a staff level, that their performance must improve substantially whilst taking into account the constraints that they actually have to work with. On your question, Chairperson, the DG will respond to that. I'm not aware of it. But I agree with you that we need to be empathetic, but at the same time, work within the legal framework that is actually available to us. So in going back to the private sector involvement, you've had indications, firstly, of the slot sales, both on the container line and potentially on the East London line. You've had indications of the RFQs and RFIs, both in relation to Durban Pier 2 and NUCA development as well. And if you read the fine print, as we have said to the committee before via Transnet, that if we want NUCA in particular to be successful, it's important that we develop it together with a global shipping line, ideally, as a transshipment port. And that's the kind of direction that process would actually take, with the necessary involvement of local players as well in that particular regard. On the question of rail, the usage of some common infrastructure by PRASA and by Transnet, the Minister of Transport is in the process of ushering in a rail policy that we are cooperating with, and you'll see it soon, but it's in his hands as a policy department, and alignments between rail policy and rail operations, whether it's in PRASA or Transnet, becomes quite important as we go forward. So there's no doubt that we still have challenges in relation to finance for expansion, for example, of the rail network, or adding additional locos, or the kind of vandalization that infrastructure is faced with. But those are challenges that Transnet is very diligently working on, so that they can overcome those challenges and move forward. But what is critical is that the various customers that Transnet has, Chair, need to be aware of the kind of new direction, as Mr. Tlape pointed out, that Transnet is moving in. Secondly, that they can expect open lines of communication, whether it's the citrus industry, to the table grape industry, or the automobile industry, or the mining sector, or the mineral sector. Each of them, both through the ministry, but also and department, and also Transnet, we've created over the past months a very open dialogue, so that we understand them and they understand us. And we're moving from that to potential synergies between what they have to offer and what we have to offer. So the coal sector, for example, is helping in relation to some of the security issues that we've talked about earlier on the North Corridor, that is the line between Mpumalanga and Richards Bay, and similar offers of assistance and the creation of synergies has been offered by other mining sectors as well. So in sum, I think Honorable Gumede is absolutely right. Transnet is on the right path. Secondly, it has the potential to come out of its own troubles if given time and the necessary support. And thirdly, there's a lot of creative thinking in Transnet in order to deal with both the challenges on the one hand, but opportunities as well, which at an appropriate point in time can extend to other countries on the African continent as well. So let me hand over to the CEO and her colleagues to address some of the questions that I've referred to them, and then the DG might want to come in on the question you've raised, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO.
Unable to hear.
Okay, CEO, you seem to have a problem. CEO?
Chair, good morning. Morning, Chair. This is Ralph Morse from Transnet Engineering. I can perhaps field a question on the locomotive quickly.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. So my name is Ralph Morse. I lead Transnet Engineering, which is responsible for the maintenance of the locomotive. So just in terms of the question on the 1064 locomotives, what is out of commission and what is running at the moment? At the moment, just first of all, we are able to maintain the daily train plan at the moment with the locomotives we have. In fact, today we're oversupplying by 15 locomotives compared to the train plan today. But in terms of the 1064 locomotives, I'm going to run through the different classes, just reminding who the suppliers are so that you can reflect on that. So the two electric classes, first of all, the 23E, which we acquired from BT Alstom. I think you had opportunity to visit that line when you visited the Durban plant. They're continuing to deliver at the moment. So we have today three locomotives stopped out of 74 total. We don't have spares and maintenance problems with that specific locomotive because the normal procurement channels are open and we can acquire. The one that is really giving us a headache is the second electric locomotive, which is the 22E. Today, 100 of the delivered 228 are stopped. Basically, we don't have a channel to acquire spares for them at the moment. So what we are doing from an engineering perspective is looking at what subsystems we can reverse engineer, what systems we can go straight to the original equipment manufacturer. For instance, the brake system on the locomotives is not Chinese, it's a WavTech brake system. And we've analyzed each component on the locomotive at this stage and are developing a strategy around what we can impact and what we can't impact. The key trouble that we're having is the issues where there's deep IP that we can't access, intellectual property, such as in the train control systems. But what the team are doing at component level, for instance, is we are re-engineering other compressors to replace the compressors that are faulty on those locomotives. And there's a whole host of such activities at the moment. In terms of the diesel locomotives, there's two classes, the 45D and the 44D. I'll start with the 45D. I think you visited that line in Durban as well, and we're able to see that it really has not been a successful program. Of the 18 locomotives that have been delivered and are still serviceable as such, 12 are stopped at the moment, so we only have six of those locomotives running in total. The last of the locomotives is the 44D, which is a GE WavTech locomotive. We have a long-standing history of using GE equipment, and today 47 of 197 are stopped today waiting for spares. So the problem with the 4040 is again, not the channel, but certain of the items are long lead items. For instance, a turbocharger is a 6-month waiting list at the moment. What we've also discovered in discussions directly with the OEM is that there are international constraints in terms of global logistics at the moment. You know, they've had a setback in terms of delivering spares as well from the COVID pandemic. And a simple thing such as shipping has been proving to be quite a challenge, where, for instance, a container of spares to move it to South Africa has gone up by a factor of 5 in the last year. So when we go back to the procurement system and we factor all those issues in, there's obviously been a big shift in the relative price of spares. And through the BPFMA legislation and a consideration of fair price, it often takes us quite a while to resolve those issues as well. But as I said, I think the key takeaway at the moment is we're managing to sustain the current train plan with a 15 net oversupply today. And what it will impact in time is the expansion plans in terms of the corridors to get to new levels. So we're working on how we can assist in doing that. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if there's any questions.
Chair,
is the CEO back?
Yes, I am, Chair.
Yeah, you.
Chair, I am. All right, thank you. Apologies, we are having a horrendous connectivity problem today. So if I drop off again, can please one of the experts step in my grasp? So, Chair, I'll start off with the question of our relationship with Maputo Port. At this stage, we have no equity position whatsoever at the port. However, we have approached the Maputo Development Corporation and CFM, which is the rail operator on their side, who actually own, who actually are the major shareholders of the port, for an equity stake of about 15% or so, which is what is available. In the port. We are still in engagement with them, and it's not the fastest process that we're running with. However, I just want to be clear is that with or without that equity position in Maputo Port, we still benefit significantly by moving the chrome and the magnetite through Maputo. Maputo has a fundamental constraint. So whenever people say that Maputo is going to throw, is going to take all of the volumes from Richards Bay or South Africa, it's not probable. The port is not deep enough. It has all kinds of problems with silting and the rest of it. So the competitive port will remain fundamentally for heavy, large vessels is going to remain Richards Bay. And that's what we are going to continue pushing very hard around. In the case of, I think the national white, the draft white paper for rail is in process, which has been very clear that the restructuring of Transnet is the responsibility of its board as well as the shareholder. So the position that we've taken is the moving South Africa original position, which was a policy position that said we would have a dominant rail operator and have third party access. And this is what I think. That this is what Caesar was trying to explain when she was talking about the grandfather rights, because it is in the grandfathering areas that we remain the dominant operator. And in the areas around containers and into parts of the Cape, of the South Core, South Corridor, as we call it, we would have more than enough space for third-party participation. However, the restructuring of TFR will have an infrastructure manager as well as the operating side of their division. If you recall that in terms of the regulation of this industry, the Department of Transport are putting in a transport economic regulator, and the transport economic regulator will ensure that there's fair pricing and equity in access to the system, number one. Number two, the rail safety regulator is actually really quite crucial because they are the ones who decide who can come into the system and not TFR itself, who decides who come into the system. And then also, most importantly, in with regards to the issue of infrastructure, It is the rail safety regulator who sets actually the standards at which we should be maintaining the system to, and they determine what is safe operations and what is not safe operations. The questions that Honourable Dlamini raises around the interface relationship between PRASA and Transnet and TFR in particular are real questions that we have to resolve. The issue around coordination of security, absolutely crucial, because that's the only way that we don't have inefficiency in the spend on security. There is a grouping that we currently have, which is made up of Eskom, Telkom, PRASA, and ourselves, and recently Access also asked to join, which is looking at issues of cable theft so that we can be able to coordinate our activities and ensure that we're also coordinating our spend across the system. I hope that, and then the issue of community encroachment, I think the Minister raises for us. We look forward to yourselves as parliamentarians and the department finding a solution for us, because we can do so much, and beyond a certain point, we actually need other government departments and spheres of government to help us in clearing the servitudes to ensure that actually it remains a safe operation as well. On the questions raised, and it's part of the questions raised by Honourable Kachali and Honourable Gumede, which is around the partnerships that we're looking at. How do we ensure that there's transparency and that there's no malfeasance in it at all? As the Minister indicated, the RFQs, and every time, even the RFP, when we get to that stage, will be advertised on our website as well as National Treasury. You are able to read the detailed documents. It's completely available. So that's one level of transparency that we have. Inside Transnet, we have a framework that is governs that has been in the process of being approved by the board, which governs third-party investments. And this is an investment framework that, frankly, would exist in most companies we will then have available, and as soon as possible, have the department also look at it for their purposes to see that there's alignment between our governance processes and what we're looking for inside the company and what the department would like to see. After that, it's a document that would be co-owned by the department and ourselves and should be readily available as well. Ralph has answered the questions around the locals. The issue of, however, the locals going forward is going to remain a serious challenge until we are able to get over the hump of the legal process that we're in right now with the at least the three remaining OEMs that we've not been able to move on, and that would be BT Outsource, CNR, as well as CSR, or their successor organization, which is CRRC. Until that is closed, it remains a real challenge. And for us, the bigger issue is not even that it's a challenge on the 1054 only, and as Ralph was indicating, it becomes a challenge even on the locals that we bought prior to that. But we're working hard to find alternative solutions and also pushing really hard to get to closure on this matter, because as soon as we can close, we then have the possibility to start a new procurement event that would then help us once and for all to get over this problem. The local content question, I think the Minister has answered us. I mean, the bigger issue, and also we would completely support using procurement as a means of re-industrializing South Africa. There are a lot of questions, though, that need to be covered, especially with these changes that are put. For example, if you allow third-party access onto rail, the new entities that are going to come into the system, what are the rules that they're going to face in terms of where and how they can source their rolling stock, where and how they can source their componentry? Because the minute you allow them to source in a different fashion to Transnet, you're basically making sure that Transnet competitiveness, and in fact, this is not a question also for Transnet, because you would have seen that the policy actually at some point sees third-party operators even on passenger systems. You're then basically saying PRASA, Transnet are not faced by the same competitive advantage as the private sector would. So you basically disadvantage us if you don't force all of us to support the local industry, which we all believe is important. But let's also be honest, sometimes you're able to get much cheaper things if you are able to import. So What we're doing with the DGIC is working on a rail master plan, so to speak. I'm saying master plan because it's not quite the same master plan as we'd have with the auto sector. But what this plan does is looks at the rail value chain in South Africa and looks at manufacturing that we have in South Africa and starts asking the question, what is it that we can make competitively in South Africa? And then what we would do as Transnet for starters is commit that from these companies we will buy our local content. Now, it's a perfectly sensible strategy for us as well, because this long lead item issue that Draft is raising and the logistics would not be a problem because the suppliers are locally available. So we have a vested interest in buying as much as we possibly can in South Africa. As soon as we close on this, hopefully we'll be able to then reach agreement with the DTIC on the elements that we buy local and then report regularly and then be able to import that which we must import because we are subscale in South Africa and competitive and volumes a matter or IP matter. But we're making progress, but there's no doubt that the issues around ensuring greater efficiency in procurement remain quite a challenge. And I'll leave that to the DG of DPE to come back on because it was quite directed at DPE. On the local content, so I've answered the local content. On the CNR issue, I think it's tied up fundamentally with the 1064 process. And until such time as we're able at least to have them respond to what is our allegation, we really are sort of like in a catch-22 sort of situation. But we can assure the committee that we would never do a procurement like that ever again. We would want to make sure that whoever we choose as a partner to supplier locals in the future has actually established experience, they've manufactured, and we would make sure to go and visit the facility and actually make sure that we have met other companies who have used their products as well. But also, as we've indicated, one of the biggest strategies that we have is to ensure that there's standardization and alignment in the fleet, both of the equipment at the port as well as the equipment that we use on rail. Because one of the biggest challenges that we have is also the issue that we have to carry spares of a wide range of types, be it local, be it trains, be it RTG rubberized rubber tire gantries, on any equipment because we've got too many types at any given time. In any event, that acts against an industrialization strategy because you are never, ever able to build sufficient volumes. So in the ports, we are re-looking at how we're going to standardize on that side as well as on the rail side. As soon as we're able to achieve standardization, our ability to manage both inventory on the one hand as well as be able to have a much tighter capacity, frankly, to develop our own IP. We spend quite a lot of money on an annual basis on R&D, but the problem is that it's so dispersed, we've not been able to develop scale. The questions that were raised by Honorable Gumede that relate to agriculture and its importance, absolutely an important area for us that we need to work on. And as Cesar indicated, agriculture is going to be a priority that we are focusing on, which we support actually, maybe not to the extent that we'd like to support on rail, but hopefully with some third parties coming, we might be able to move a lot more on rail. But we have a lot of activity and engagement with the agricultural sector in our ports. And we're working really hard to make sure that we start meeting their performance demands. But thus far, we've been able to grow with the volumes that we move through the ports. Chair, the question that relates to the case that we won at the Labour Court, and that's actually what we've indicated, is that this is a case that went to the Labour Court. This issue started in 2016 or 2017 in Ngqura and related to workers that were demanding, workers were saying they were not being getting enough money at the end of the month because they were not being allocated enough overtime. Now, as you know, overtime is not a right. And so that unfortunately led to a situation where the workers walked out of the operations because they felt that they should be given more overtime because that's one way in which your salary can be bolstered. And after a long protracted process, they laid a grievance there had been a process that we went through. Eventually, the labor court awarded the case on our side, and we won as Transnet. And we've been more than willing to engage with the workers, but we cannot go against what was the labor court ruling. And I'm not sure what more we are expected to do as Transnet. Because if they want to go and do a legal review, we absolutely support them. It's their right to do that. And we will follow our rights as well as Transnet. I'm not sure if Dumi and Sandra want to add anything to that question, Chair. I hope we've answered all of the questions that were raised.
Yes, Poshia, good morning to the Chair and Minister, committee members. And board members, I think you've covered what happened to date. The issue that we currently have, Chair, on the matter of Bahia, as you referenced it, is that the employees, ex-colleagues, are relying on a defective report that was leaked to them. So from a legal point of view, that's the point of contention. We are contending that the report that they're seeking access to is defective in all instances. So that's where we are with regard to the PIA application currently. And I think Poshia covered as to how we got here in terms of the dismissals. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to the executive. Honorable members, I think you still have chance to take second bite in the next few minutes that we have. Can I check if there are any other members that would love to make contribution or ask questions?
Check.
Yes, Honorable Kumede, one. Is there any other member? Let me check on the Nkosinathi. Who else? There are two. Honorable Dlamini, Honorable Kumede. Is there anyone else wants to... before I close? Okay. Meaning, honorable members, only two that would like to have some follow-up question. Or let me start with you, Honorable Dlamini.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think the responses that have been given don't sufficiently address my concern in terms of where the responsibility of the rail network will lie under the current circumstances. Remember, there was a suggestion that there'll be a single body that would be responsible for the rail network, including its security, maintenance, and everything. The responses don't seem to gravitate towards that direction. And if we proceed with these plans as presented now under the current problem, I don't think we are going to have an efficient and effective rail network, because the challenges that exist now will still continue to exist, because there is no single line of authority and responsibility when it comes to our rail network as a whole, at large. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Kumede?
No, Chair. Mine was a simple one, just to find out whether questions as raised by Honorable Shabalala, have they been covered? Because she requested that some of the questions that she raised be addressed as well. That was only one that I wanted to remind you of.
Can you reflect on them on her behalf?
Unfortunately, properly. I saw the message and it quickly vanished. So I don't have them.
Okay. CEO, have you seen those questions on the chat that have been returned by Honorable Judy Shabalala?
No, Chair. I mean, if somebody could, if somebody can read them for us, please, it would be appreciated.
Okay. Let me check. I cannot bring
them. Yeah, I'll try to help.
Okay, Minister.
May I help, Chair?
Okay, before that, I want also to ask another question from the Chair. Just my understanding, there are two reports from the Zondo Commission that has been presented to the President. I think we all have, because they are in the public domain, we all have access to them, including the executive and Transnet. I just want to check, because most of those reports do implicate this entity, Eskom and others, but particularly to this, have you perhaps, because it affects people that have been implicated ever since the state capture issue happened. Have you checked with the IC, with the SIU or the NPA as to what extent are they fast-tracking the issue? Because it does leave us as a committee, including yourselves, as Transnet, including the minister, to some extent, that these processes are dragging and dragging. But I know for a fact that they are not dragging because of us as the portfolio committee, nor the ministry or Transnet. They are dragging because the investigators and the law enforcement authorities are taking very long time to deal with these issues. Have you perhaps saw a need of engaging these law enforcement authorities such as the SIU and the NPA as to what extent are they are trying to fast track this process so that at the end of the day we see those who are implicated, those that have been reflected very strongly having participated in wrongdoing, both from the side of the politicians and also the side of the companies implicated, those private sector companies that are implicated, including former officials of these entities. To what extent is the process of arresting or doing something about these individuals? That's the problem. I'm raising it because sometimes the media come and ask us about those issues while we know for a fact that it's not us who are holding the process. Is actually the law enforcement, including the judicial process, but at least investigators supposed to be doing. Don't you see a need of engaging these entities so that at the end of the day they can brief us to what extent are they doing their work so that these people can be seen behind the bars as soon as possible? Thank you.
So, Chair, let me respond to that. I did make some comments at the beginning about the two reports, but let me remind all of the colleagues. Firstly, what we are saying is that the department has got a legal team now, which is looking into the reports. Secondly, we have met with all of the chairs of boards and CEOs and their legal officials where relevant, to ask them to go through the report and present us with an action plan. Thirdly, that in the next 10 days, those plans will be collated, number one. Number two, there have been interactions with some of the law enforcement entities, but we have not taken that further until we've done our homework. And as you will recall, the president has said that when the final report from the Zondo Commission is presented to the presidency, which would happen at the end of February, government as a whole will collate all of these actions or intentions and make a presentation to Parliament. However, we've been asked to look into the kind of questions that you've actually been raising, and that's why we've taken the initiative that we have. And each board, together with the legal team that the department has got in place last week, are looking into that as well. And I did say at the beginning, as soon as we have collated some of that material, we will certainly advise the committee and take the matter further. The Minister of Justice yesterday also addressed this question by referring to the independent directorate, the number of cases that they have actually prepared, the fact that they are going to appoint a new person to head the independent directorate, and referred to Section 38, I think, of the NPA Act, which allows the NPA to bring in professionals from outside of the NPA where appropriate and necessary in order to assist build up the capacity of the NPA to take action. So we will, once we have our act together in the next 10 days or so, be interacting with the relevant authorities. And I did say at the beginning that there are different types of actions that could emerge from the recommendations of the Zondo Commission. The first is criminal. The second is civil, including delinquent directorships, for example, in some instances, although that process takes very long in South Africa, given the legislation that we have. So something should be done about that. But in relation to SIU investigated matters, there's also claims that can be lodged via the special tribunal that has been set up under that legislation. So that is the work currently happening in each of the entities to see how we follow through with the findings and the reports of the Zondo Commission. So in relation to Ms. Shabalala, she makes reference to insufficient infrastructure investment, but we've covered that ground before, indicating that there's a shortage of money and there are different ways in which we are as Transnet looking into bringing in investments, and some of those involve private sector participation in line with government policy. Then there are some trade-offs, she says, that needs to be made in relation to personnel costs versus capital investment in infrastructure. Well, Transnet has just undergone a process which is responded to in the other presentation on responses to questions raised the last time in relation to voluntary severance packages, which then has created some opportunities for some of these trade-offs to happen. But Ms. Shabalala later then says, lastly, job security is their contribution on the fight against youth unemployment. So I think what we require is an understanding that training forms a very important component of SOEs generally. And again, this is an issue addressed in the first presentation, which responds to questions. But all the SOEs are going to be mindful of their responsibility in relation to youth training and unemployment as well. And where appropriate, and where resources are available from other branches of government, those resources can be utilized within the SOEs as well. So that's part of the trade-off that we are looking at. Then there's the question of uncollected debts and revenue that needs to be addressed in order to improve the financial management. The CEO can respond to that, but that's an internal matter that we don't have complete command about. And then Honorable Dlamini's point about who's responsible for rail infrastructure. At the current position, as I understand it, TRASA is responsible for its rail infrastructure, and Transnet, which is the majority of the rail infrastructure in the country, is responsible for rail infrastructure in that particular regard. Is there the need to now consolidate some of this? I think what we're doing is waiting for the rail policy to emerge, because there might be some wisdom in that. Internally, as was explained to you earlier on, there is a, let's call it, separation of responsibilities. One in relation to maintaining the rail infrastructure, and the other in relation to the operations on the rail infrastructure itself. So, Honorable Dlamini, both on the question of maintaining and extending the network on the one hand, but also securing that network is going to be a question that we'll have to resolve as the rail policy begins to come forward. But I don't think we require policy for, as the chair has been pointing out, for law enforcement entities to do their work. And for us all as parliamentarians to create a mindset amongst the South African public that any infrastructure, whether it's rails or school or parliament, for example, are public institutions and public assets, and they need to be protected for future generations as well. So it's in that regard, Chair, that we need a culture change, we need a mindset change, we need some tough actions from the security sector, and that is where some interactions are occurring with the security clusters as well. So in sum, in relation to Ms. Shamalala's questions, I think we've addressed all of them, and the CEO will just add the one about debt collections, and then the rest we can is work in progress, if you like. On the question that you've addressed to the DG, I think the CEO has answered that already. So the DG doesn't have to add anything unless he wants to introduce some new fact before you check. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Honourable Chair. Thank you, Minister. So on the issue of uncollected debt, I mean, it's quite a mountain that we're climbing. And part of the challenge that we've had, which we are now starting to address, is that our systems are manual. And because the systems are manual, between the counterclaim that we're going through a process, the legal team, is going through a process of sifting through all of those so that we arrive at actually how much are we paid, what's the net number. A big project that we're starting this year, which is actually also quite crucial for us to deal with irregular expenditure and those general controls, is digitization in most of these administrative areas so that we can then finally be able to close the loop in this area. I mean, in certain areas, we've got outstanding debt since 2016, which is quite a long time to have to go back and clean. So it's a priority area that we're looking at. I think on the issues that were raised by the minister, they're raised by Honorable Dlamini, minister's answered, and the other questions that I hadn't seen have been answered. Safe to say on the rail policy, I mean, the draft rail policy, the Department of Transport is working on that. Hopefully in there, there'll be increased clarity coming out of that. Chair, there was a note that was posted by the Honourable Vitalis that relates to the Procurement Act. Thank you very much, Chair. That is all our story. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we reach the end of our meeting. My task now is to thank everybody, to thank the Transnet executive and the board for being helpful and presented to this comprehensive report and be able to answer all the questions. The minister, thank you for your valuable contribution, as always you do, and the honorable members and guests which attending our meeting. I think the meeting now is declared at the end. Thank you so much.
Chair?
Yes?
Can we request the members to stay behind and then we allow the guests to not to log off?
Oh, yes. As we normally do, all the members must left behind and we release all our guests so that we fight the minutes of the previous meeting.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kaifas.
Chair.
Yes.
The most important thing is our program, which I'm going to flight.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I just take quickly the members through the program? There's a meeting that we had to cancel on ESCOM due to the oversight that we had undertaken to the Port of Durban. Secondly, we have rescheduled that meeting for the 23rd of February. And then I'm not sure if there are other issues that members would like to address with ESCOM. And then there is also on the 2nd of March, briefing by the Department of the Medium-Term Performance Report of the department and state-owned companies, including issues raised by the Auditor General of South Africa. Because what happened is that the Auditor General in the last financial year gave the department and state-owned enterprises audit performance plans that they must develop that and address all the concerns that they have raised. So it will be prudent for the committee to get to find out if those things are being addressed. And then on the 9th of February and the 16th of February, we had Danel. However, Danel were informed that still it hasn't tabled their annual report yet, and they would not have tabled the annual report by the end of this term. So it means the committee must look at what is it that you need to prioritize for that particular meeting. And then the 16th of March, there is a debriefing by National Treasury and DTI on the issues that Transnet and ESCOM are raising with regards to the procurement processes, the triple PFA, the local content requirements, and also issues of irregular expenditure and being re-expensed for previous years. So these are the issues I need to first get a list of all the issues from both Transnet and ESCOM in terms of what are the impediments and policy problems so that we're able to have a meeting with DTI and National Treasury and the department on those issues. And then on the 23rd of March, which is a meeting, this also it's a matter that I don't think if Janel has not yet given an annual report, there might be a possibility that this meeting would not also materialize, which is the Department of Defense and Military Veterans and GPE on the future role of Janel and the support from government, because this meeting was supposed to have had it last year, but we were requested by the ministers that there are still discussions underway with in relation to Janel. Yeah. And then there will be a week again at the end of March where the committee will have to decide in terms of which areas do we prioritize for oversight. Thanks, Chair.
Yes. Okay. That is the program, Honorable.
Chair. Hello, Chair.
Sorry. Yes, Honorable Kumeda.
No, I wish to move that, in fact, because it looks as if Mr. Desang is not yet ascertain about the status of Janel and the reports. Let's confirm that. However, in terms of the spaces that will then be available, I'm not sure. You just shift them upwards so that Janel will be covered by the following program of the week, so that whilst the committee, especially the chair, because it's the chair that is responsible here, until the chair then identifies what other aspects or perhaps we may want to discuss as a committee. There are quite a lot of issues and things that we need to discuss. We once spoke about a semi-strategic meeting to discuss our own issues as a committee. So we may find a slot, because it looks as if there will be three slots that in fact may be available. Any of the three may then be taken to make sure that we address some of the outstanding matters. So that will be my recommendation, Chair, so that we don't find ourselves having to struggle with time.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Hello, members. Can also all other members participate in this? If Janel won't be able to have presented their financial report, would it be necessary for the members to actually engage them as to what is the real problem, so that we understand who were actually the contributing factor towards them not presenting? Why we just in the light that they're not going to be there, and then we say no, we will see them late? Why don't we just get, I'm asking you, Mr. Mutumi, if it is not possible perhaps to meet with them and they gave us whatever report at their disposal in terms of the state or the entity.
Yes, Chairperson, you are correct. You are correct. You can get an update, status update of what is happening in the entity.
Chair, could I come in here?
Yes.
I'd like to second that we do get status updates, regardless of whether they're timely reported or not. But I would also like to respectfully just ask the committee when we are going to consider the private members'
whether the committee will support the private members bill, which I submitted, which is simply to ensure that these entities do report their financials on time, and if they don't, that there are consequences. I think we need to consider this. Thank you. We can't hear, you're cutting out.
I'm asking if there is any other member to make a contribution on this, or we agree.
Yes, Chair. I think we are covered with the fact that even though they did not submit their annual statement, it does not stop us to proceed with our programs. Yes. Even the issue, the last part that Mutsumi was saying, we can't have a bilateral with the veterans or the military department. I believe even in the absence of their submission, we can still proceed with the same with the meeting, because our main aim is not all about checking their financial annual statement or report, but we want to understand their operation as DNL and with their relationship with the department. But lastly, Chair, I wanted to check with Disang whether are we, or in the next term, we'll be putting up the issue of SA Express. We get the final resting report about that in the next term, because we are agreeing that we must not temper with changing the term program as he has presented. Thanks.
Then I think we are in agreement, honourable members, with the program, including the fact that DNL will have to come on that particular day, provide us with a state that's is there anything else, Mr. Mutsumi?
Yes, Chair, there is a set of minutes that we need to adopt.
Yes, bring them on. Come with it.
Yes, I want to share it, Chair.
Okay.
These are basically the minutes of the meeting with Transnet, the one we just had a follow-up meeting for. It was on the 8th of December, 2021. It was a briefing by Transnet on their integrated report and financial annual financial statements for 2020-2021. And the first page, I did the minister, the members last week. This is the opening remarks. Transnet was led by the chairperson of the board, Mr. Pokumolefe. We've also given a synopsis of the presentation, what it entails, and then the discussions. The discussions, obviously, these are only salient issues that were raised by the committee. Due to the time constraints, we couldn't get the answers, and the answers were sent to us in written format. So it was only the question that were captured by on that day. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Is there any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Zamini moves for the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable Damini, move for the adoption. Is there any second?
Gumede seconded.
Honorable Gumede seconded. Is there anything else, Mr. Mutsumi?
No, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think that's the end of this committee today. Let's go to listen to the president. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.